anyone is listening to this as our first episode, congrats to you.
I mean, I love seeing anyone perform and dance on stage, but the ballet, there's like something very special about seeing it, I think.
Oh my God, I feel like this is basic level French and I'm really failing here.
Wow, okay, that was good, that was good. Am I like,
that was not good. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, this has been much anticipated for 2.5 years now, I want to say. Steph finally took me to the ballet, so here we are.
Oh, I want to sing like a chorus line right now. The tragic at the ballet. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. This is a production that was planned for Karen Kane's farewell season and her 50th anniversary at the National Ballet of Canada, which was now two years ago.
Or like almost 3 years ago at this
point. Basically. Because I do think it was, so it was planned to be part of the 2019-2020 season. And we had it in our like episode spreadsheet where we plan what we're going to do for the year in June of 2020, when it was the first originally supposed to run here at the National Ballet of Canada. And then obviously that didn't happen. And so when I saw that they were doing it again this season with Karen Kane's new staging, I was like, we must go.
Did we say it was Swan Lake? I don't know if we said it was Swan Lake. Sorry, everybody. It was Swan Lake.
It was Swan Lake. Karen Kane's new staging of Swan Lake. And I think Swan Lake is kind of a great, in my opinion, introductory ballet because everyone's familiar with it in some way.
Yeah.
So I thought, and you're kind of getting classic ballet, you know, and you kind of know it's going to be good, or at least I think you know it's going to be good. So if you're a listener to the podcast, you might know I grew up dancing. I danced. I took ballet and many other styles of dance until I was 17, 18 years old. And so because of that, I love ballet, and I've been going to the ballet for years, sometimes taking friends with me, sometimes by myself. But Tara had never been before, and I wanted to introduce her to the ballet. So this is I'm going to lead the episode today. I'm in charge.
But before we continue, I just want to say, because you brought up June 2020, which was obviously the year that we had, like, planned out. Like, we had so many things planned for that year. And we can finally, minus Sing Street, say that the 2019-2020 season is complete.
It's true. So the Tony Awards were this past weekend. So we're, everything that we wanted to do, we've done. And now we're like free falling.
Yeah. So whatever happens after this episode, unknown, because we were not scheduled to do anything else past Swan Lake in 2020. So it's all brand new.
Well, you know what? Chicago from Stratford.
You're right. Chicago from Stratford.
And here's what it takes from Stratford. Never mind. Who unknown even knows when that will exist?
Yes.
Okay. Kelly v. Kelly. Sorry.
Kelly v. Kelly's coming back.
It's coming.
And Merrily is coming back. So we're on the right track. Things are happening. Things are happening again that never happened. But yeah, it's just funny to think of like a calendar from June 2020 to think that was there. And so was like everything else that just ended. So
we're full circle. Right. No, it's so true. It's so true. Finally, everything has kind of happened. Okay, yes. So I want to talk to you. I want to ask you, like, what did you expect from the ballet in general before we went? Like, what were your kind of preconceived notions?
So I guess, I mean, living in Toronto my entire life, I have driven past the Four Seasons many, many times. And I think I've been in there, but I don't, it was obviously not for the ballet. But I knew that was the place that like housed the ballet. And I want to say I maybe went to the Nutcracker when I was very little. My mom, who listens to every episode, can definitely confirm or deny this. But I have obviously not been since I was like maybe six, if that was when I saw it. Wow. So I had always, I guess, heard from you that like the ballet was chic, and I didn't know how chic until we got to the ballet, which we'll get to later in this episode, I believe. But that was one thing. I, for some reason, thought that there like might have been some dialogue, or maybe like a track with speaking or some sort of music that wasn't instrumental playing. I don't know why I thought this, but like, this is what I thought. And then the third thing, when I knew that we were seeing Swan Lake, even in 2020, I was like, oh, Black Swan. Because right. that is like the one thing I think most people have seen that movie. And the most iconic, I would say, scoring is from Swan Lake. I think even if you haven't seen Black Swan or seen the ballet, you know one of the songs that lives in this ballet, because it's just, I feel so in mainstream media these days and has been forever, like for so, so many years. So it's just like iconic instrumental music.
Absolutely. Like, I think, you know, it was composed by Tchaikovsky, who's composed many other ballets as well, including The Nutcracker, which is probably the most famous one, in 1875-76. And I think it's, like, amazing that we, you know, 100 plus years later are still using the same music. And it still holds up. It's still so, so beautiful.
Well, I mean, what I was saying to you when we were there, like one of the most recent times that we heard it was in Billy Elliot when we saw it in Stratford. Like I had seen Billy Elliot years before, but went over my head that they danced to that like main theme, towards the end of that show. So yeah, it's used everywhere these days.
It's almost, Swan Lake is almost shorthand for ballet. When you see Swan, like it is kind of the mainstream ballet when you see them in the swan outfits doing the movements with the headpiece in a movie the little like the little earmuffs. When if someone's going to the ballet, very oftentimes it's Swan Lake, because it's just kind of like a shorthand in popular culture for Swan Lake. So so you knew basically Black Swan from Swan Lake. That was my next question. What did you know about Swan Lake? What did you think the plot of Swan Lake was?
I really only knew that it was like, I thought it was a different dancer, but then I was like, no, Black Swan, she's the same dancer. And I didn't know, like, to what extent she's possessed, if you will, if that's even the right way to, like, describe that. But I really only knew that she dances as, like, the White Swan and then, like, goes through some sort of possession, in quotes, and, like, does the whole Black Swan. But I did not know about, I mean, I knew that the prince character exists. Existed because, again, like, was it Natalie Portman's husband that plays that part in Black Swan? I think it was.
I've never seen Black Swan.
Oh my God, Steph. Actually, no, he was the choreographer. I don't know. Whoever played, I knew that, like, the prince existed because he's in the movie, but other than that, I like the chorus of the swans, because they're also in the movie. Like, Mila Kunis is a swan in that movie. But I had no idea the whole, like, prince, like, bachelor plot line. And I definitely had no idea about the masquerade at the beginning of
the second act. Always a masquerade. It's not always a masquerade, to be fair, but it was a masquerade. Okay, so
I was waiting for the Phantom of the Opera to like arrive
when,
there.
When Rothbart came in his cape, that was very Phantom. That's what you said to be Phantom. Okay, so now that we saw Swan, like, if you had to do like a 30-second plot summary, what would you say it would be?
Oh my God. Okay, none of these people have names to me. Like, is that right?
They do have names, but...
Real names?
The thing about the ballet, and that Tara kind of alluded to, is that there is no dialogue. It's purely visual.
Yeah.
Only told through the music, which is instrumental for the most part. There are some ballets with like some lyrics, or some traditional ballets with some lyrics. Like more modern stuff has like lyrics and songs with lyrics. But for a big long story ballet like this, very rarely is there lyrics. Mm-hmm. And so it's told only through instrumental music and through visual storytelling and movement, no words whatsoever. So they do have names, but if you're not reading the program, you wouldn't know these names.
So for the sake of this plot summary and my synopsis, I will be using the names The Prince, The White Swan, The Black Swan, and like The Monster.
Okay. Yeah? Okay. I want to hear what you think the plot was. Okay.
Okay, great. So it starts off with the prince, like, looking for a wife, I want to say. He's having all of these different girls dance for him, but I don't know if they're actually supposed to be dancing or they're just dancing because it's the ballet, but whatever. They're like showing off, I don't know like where they're from or whatever, and he picks between two girls and his friend is helping him like choose who to pick, I think. And then he somehow, oh sorry, between all of this, we like meet the monster, who like sort of shows up throughout, I would say, the entirety of the ballet. So after you think that he's chosen, I'm going to say his wife, he manages to find himself like within all of these swans. Wow. This is okay. Like, if anyone is listening to this as our first episode, congrats to you. And
this is not an introductory moment. This is not an introductory moment.
So he meets the rest of the swans and then he sees the main white swan who is just like out of this world stunning. And you can differentiate her because she was wearing like a sparkly crown and the rest of them are wearing earmuffs. I mean, she is too, but hers has like sparkles on it.
She's a little sparklier.
Yeah. So, and then they dance together and obviously immediately fall in love. That's act one. Act two is we start at the masquerade and the same two girls that we had met like at the beginning dance are there. And so it's his friend and they're all like dancing for him, I guess. And then he comes down and so does the monster and now the black swan, who he thinks is the same girl. And then they dance together. And then there's some sort of like deal that happens with the prince and the monster. And then he finds out that the black swan is a different girl and not the one that he fell in love with. So it's very dramatic. Actually, that was a really cool staging moment. And then there's a lot more dancing that happens. And then he dies at the end.
Okay, I'm going to say you're like 60% there.
Yeah, that was like not my best plot summary, but it's a little bit confusing.
No. Absolutely. I do think the ballet can be quite confusing because there's no words to be told. And I think there's something really beautiful and special about that because it transcends language. And it's also just very much up for your interpretation. You can see this and interpret it in whatever way you feel. But sometimes it does get a little confusing. You're like, are they siblings? Are they in love? I don't know.
I never got the sibling vibe. But... Okay. So, I had no idea what the friend's role was.
I've got the program right here and I've got the plot summary here.
Oh my God. Okay? Also something that I did not read before it started.
And I think
which maybe I should have.
I don't know. I think it's fine to not because you shouldn't have to read the plot summary in advance.
You should be able to understand.
What's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should be able to communicate to you. And I think you basically got it, but I think sometimes the identity of characters is a little bit interesting. So it's technically split into four acts. So act one and act two are before intermission, and act three and act four are after intermission.
Yeah.
Kind of like four vignettes almost. So act one is when they're in the royal courtyard. Basically, his mom goes to Prince Siegfried is the prince's name. His mom goes to him and says, "You need to get married." And he's like, "Ugh, I don't want to get married." And his best friend and actually his two sisters.
I thought they were dancing for him, like, to fall in love.
His two sisters are like, "Siegfried, come on, have fun with us. You need to get married, blah, blah, blah." So at the end, he goes to his tutor, and he's like, "Oh, I don't want to get married. I'm so depressed."
Wait, who was the tutor? Oh, the guy that was holding the...
Yes. And then he gave him the crossbow. Yeah, exactly. The guy with the lantern, like, kind of a long jacket. He gives him a crossbow, and he goes to brood in the woods, basically, in the forest.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot about the whole forest part.
You're just like, yeah, it's like, why exactly is he in the forest? It's not important why he's in the forest. So he goes to the forest, and at night, these beautiful swans turn into beautiful women, and they dance. And so he meets the swan, her name is Odette, and he's just immediately obsessed with her, in love with her. She's beautiful. Yeah. But she's being controlled by Rothbart. That's why she turns from a human to a swan. His name is Rothbart. And he's being controlled by her. So he sees her and he's like, "I love you. I want to like vow my life to you." And she's like, "Don't make a promise you can't keep. Think about it. And I do it tomorrow at the masquerade ball that your mother is throwing for you.
What, did they wife. Like hint that there was a masquerade before intermission? Because I didn't get that vibe.
You know,
well, there's no dialogue, so we don't know.
They're basically like, tomorrow, you know, wait till tomorrow. Like, don't do it mm-hmm. now. Think about it. Wait until tomorrow. I want to know that your love is really true. So then after intermission, we get to this masquerade ball, and there are three, were there three or four?
I think there were four.
Yeah, I think
the
there
girls
were
that were dancing?
Yes, there were four ladies kind of presented, and each had a different style of dance, and they all were like, oh, Prince Siegfried, pick me, pick me, pick me. But then Rothbart comes and presents his choice, which is Odile. And Prince Siegfried sees her, and he's like, this is the swan that I fell in love with last night. But Rothbart has kind of concocted this to trick him into thinking it's him. Mm-hmm. And so when he sees her dance and he falls in love with her, he thinks she's the swan he fell in love with the night before. He vows his love to her. And then Rothbart's like, haha, I tricked you. And Prince Siegfried is devastated because she is not the woman that he fell in love with.
But here's the confusing part. She's played by the same person.
Right. She's like in disguise. She's supposed to look believably like the white swan, but she is not the white swan. It is the same dancer.
It's the same dancer.
It is the same dancer. You're right. She's supposed to like, they're supposed to like look alike, but that's why, I mean, the concept of black swan, I mean, the many concepts of black swan, but is that, you know, you can be, you have the ability to play the white swan, the innocence, but do you have the ability to play this other character, the black swan who has darkness, who's a little like sexier, yeah. has more attitude, right? So you want to be able to differentiate them because you're literally the same person based on your performance of them. You want the audience to think it's a different person based on how they're performed.
Well, and in the movie Black Swan, like Natalie Portman literally becomes the black swan.
Oh, wow.
Like, so she like takes over and like basically becomes evil until like, spoiler for Black Swan, like her death at the end.
Right, right. Like she wants to inhabit that character, that role.
Yeah.
And then finally, Act 4, Siegfried shows up to the forest and all the swans are like, you betrayed our friend. You betrayed Odette. And they're upset at him. So that means she has to remain imprisoned by Rothbart. And she... Basically, Siegfried is here. He tries to beg for forgiveness, and he's been tricked, but he ends up drowning in this, like, dramatic storm because he's been, like, separated from his love.
Wow, it did not come across as a drowning.
It's true. All. It's hard. There's, like, a storm
He just fell
on.
Down.
There was a storm going I did feel his death should have been more dramatic. I felt that. But it was, like, a storm. It was very tumultuous.
There was lightning. Yeah.
There was lightning. The strobe lights were happening. That's when the strobe lights... There was a warning outside, like, strobe lights. I was like, where are the strobe
There's
lights?
There's also a warning for an open flame, and we did not see one.
I agree. I didn't see the open flame. I don't know where it was.
That's disappointing
yeah.
to me.
So I would say you were, like, mostly right, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Wow, the sisters really...
Yeah. Even me, I didn't think they were his sisters. I didn't think that they were his sisters until until I read the
until
program.
Until you read it.
Until I was like, oh, they're his sisters.
Yeah,
they
weird.
Have a character listing in here, and it's Celia and Elizabeth, Siegfried's sister. I was like,
wow. Okay.
Interesting. But yeah. So let's talk, like, what were your favorite standout moments from watching Swan Lake?
So... Because I obviously have never seen Swan Lake before or, like, the ballet in general, just to talk about, like, the experience overall, unless we're going to talk about the experience overall later.
No, no, no. Do it now.
Okay. We were in what ring was
ring
it?
Ring 3.
So ring 3. We were standing.
The Four Seasons Center for Performing Arts is huge. It's beautiful. It's also where the opera performs in Toronto. It's absolutely huge. I'm usually an orchestra girl. I always try to sit in the orchestra. But standing room was not offered in the orchestra because Swan Lake was extremely, like, well sold. So we ended up kind of standing room ring 3. It's absolutely huge. Really, really beautiful theater. Fairly new, I think. I don't know when it was built, but it's fairly, like, in the last 20-ish years, I feel.
Mm-hmm. So I would say just the overall experience in the theater from where we stood, or if you sit up there, I was shocked at how much of the orchestra pit we can see into. Because like you said, for this, like, you like to sit in the orchestra. We always sit in the orchestra when we see mm-hmm. shows, so we never really get to see the pit, or it's like underneath the stage if you're sitting above, so you don't get to see anything. Like, this is a really like exposed pit, which was amazing.
Musicals where we see, I feel like the pit is not normally that far forward.
No, definitely not.
And a lot of times, the band is usually much smaller than what we, than the full orchestra yeah. that's at the National Ballet.
So I think what's interesting about the ballet is that if you're not 100% into dance per se, like, there's an entire other show happening for you with just the orchestra. And like, shout out to the woman on the harp, because she was killing it.
The
and
harp.
Also the guy that was doing the cymbals. Like, I was watching him change out cymbals all the time, which was really fun. But in terms of what I liked, I thought that the swan feathers like set curtain piece was really mm-hmm. cool. So anytime, what's the guy's name?
Rothbart.
Anytime Rothbart would come out, especially at the beginning, like, the swan feathers would close in to almost create like a spotlight on the more mysterious parts of the show, which I thought was really interesting. And then when, like, she is now transformed as the Black Swan, same thing, like, those swan feathers came in. I thought it was like stunning, like beautiful. It's mm-hmm. I've never seen dance like that for 2.5 hours ever. So it was just like a totally different experience. We were just watching some of the like costume design interviews that it's on. Is it on?
It's on the National Ballet's YouTube channel.
Yeah. So that was stunning. I mean, like, I have obviously seen photos of Swan Lake before, and then seeing Black Swan, so as you said, sort of the traditional like swan outfit, but actually seeing it in person was really cool. And that masquerade scene, like, literally he looked exactly like the Phantom of the Opera. Like, the big hat was wearing like sort of a mask, but like the chandeliers that were happening, there is budget in this production. Like, it was stunning what they did for this. So I guess like what I liked about it was how beautiful it was. Like, it was really, really beautiful. And then just like, and we've said this with musical theater performances, concerts, whatever we've seen, like, there is really nothing like seeing an orchestra live and playing like that.
It like surrounds you. We were so far back, but like really, really surrounded you. Something else you actually commented on was the conductor and how much kind of reverence was paid to him.
Yeah. I was shocked for the bows, which you had said the bows at the ballet are never ending. But
was I wrong? Was I
no.
wrong?
No. Well, it was a little shorter than I expected, but like really everyone gets like at least 3 or 4 bows, mm-hmm. including the conductor, who like comes up from the pit onto the stage and like has his own singular bow and then gets in line and bows with the entire company. I was like, I've never seen this before in my life. Which was exciting.
I mean, the musicians and the conductor are working basically just as hard as the people on stage.
Yeah.
I think, anyway. Maybe. And so, like, I think it's nice that the ballet kind of honors that. And also that the ballet really prioritizes live music and, like, a live orchestra. Like, sometimes there's track stuff. Like, I went to see, like, a mixed bill at the National Ballet once, and it was Johnny Cash music for one of the ballets. And so that was obviously a track. Mm-hmm. I also hated it. But that's another story entirely. It was 20 minutes of really nothing. Anyway, that's another story we can talk about another day. But even, you know, before the performance starts, you can hear the orchestra warming up and the conductor walks out. There's a spotlight on him. He does a bow. He says hello before he goes to start. So it like kind of signals the beginning of the performance, this conductor coming in.
I guess the only like comparison I would say that's like relatable to is when we've seen concerts at like Roy Thomson Hall, mm-hmm. Like Stephen Reinecke gets a bow.
Yes, absolutely.
Stephen like, Reinecke.
They're the stars in their own right, the orchestra and that.
Yeah. Cause it's normally like this branch of musical theater with Stephen Reinecke conducting.
Yeah, that's
so yeah. But you've obviously seen Swan Lake before. What was your thoughts on this production?
I love Swan Lake. The last time I saw Swan Lake, I think, was like 2016. Maybe that was the last time.
Okay, so a while.
And it was actually the night I saw, I believe it was Greta Hodgkinson, who's a former principal dancer at the National Ballet. It was her farewell performance of that production of it. It had been kind of choreographed and put on her. And so I got to see the last time she did it. So it was like a really exciting night to be there. It was a Saturday night. And I've always thought it's really beautiful. I always think the most magical parts are when the swans are on stage. I think the beginning is always a little bit too long of introduction, especially because you're just waiting for the swans. Everyone's just waiting for those swans.
And also because like half of us didn't realize that that was his sister. So
right. Also that. Also that. Yeah. I thought like the way I loved as well what they did with Rothbart and his costume, and kind of you got, I felt that he was like in control of her, that she was held captive. Just the way
Even say, which I said to you when we saw it, the Rothbart costume was very Angels of America.
Yeah, the recent revival of Angels in America. You're absolutely right. The Marianne Elliott Angels in America. I felt the way that the movement was choreographed and the way that he was costumed really told a huge story that, you know, Odette is being held captive by him. She's under his control, under his power. And you didn't need words to get that from him. There are like a few like magical moments that are, there's this dance of the four swans. I don't know if it stood out to you or not, but four of the swans, they like hold hands, and it's just kind of like very intricate footwork. And as a dancer, it's one of the first like repertoire pieces you always learn when you're learning. So like I learned it when I was a teenager. It's kind of, 'cause it's very simple and it's, you just hold hands and it's just like little footwork. So that's always one of my favorite parts of seeing it. And
it did get a big cheer.
It did get a big cheer because it's like a very recognizable image for them to hold their hands and do it. And also I love, it's kind of in a Nutcracker way, but I love when the other kind of bachelorettes are presenting themselves and they each perform in a different style of dance, and they, and I think the choreographers always get to have a lot of fun in, you know, costuming them and deciding what style of dance they're going to be, or the music kind of dictates it, but getting to show something different from, I loved the final one who was kind of a flamenco Spanish dance. That was my favorite one. And they closed with her, as was the right choice. I think I want to go into my little quiz right now.
I'm nervous.
Are you nervous? You shouldn't be nervous. You shouldn't be nervous. I have a little quiz. So I took ballet lessons until I was 18 years old. And something that you may or may not know is that a lot of ballet terms, or most ballet terms, are French words.
Oh my God. Where's my mom?
I'm going to say Tara is the daughter of a French teacher. And so this is a little bit of a French quiz for Tara right now.
I did drop French after grade 9.
Like Me too.
Bad student, but here we are.
Here we go. Okay, so I have 8 terms. They're ballet terms. And first I'm just going to give you the term, and I'm looking for what you think that means in English. Because usually it kind of ties to the movement. If you don't get it after the first word, I have a little GIF or a little picture that's going to demonstrate what it is. And then after that, maybe I'll give you some hints or we'll just reveal it. Okay. So the first word is plié. Okay.
Okay. I know this one.
Okay. What does it mean? I'm looking for the French to English translation, not even the move, just the French to English translation. Or if you want to demonstrate, that's fine too, but I'm just
like, I can tell you what the move. I know it's when you have like your arms up and you sort of.
No, nothing to do with your arms.
Isn't it when you like squat, kind of?
Oh, okay, okay. So
is the French to English squat?
Okay, it's not quite squat. Here's kind of a little gif of it. Are we seeing? Are we seeing that? It means bent. It means to bend your knees. Just bend.
I think it's more of a squat than a bend.
When your mom listens, she's going to correct one, my pronunciation, and also my translation.
No, I think plié is the correct way to say that.
Yes, there's one coming up that I was actually debating with my parents what the proper pronunciation is, but I'm just going on what my ballet teachers have always told me the proper pronunciation is. Okay.
Okay.
This next word, this is the one in ballet we call this a sauté.
So not like frying in a pan.
This was the argument we're having. They're like, it's pronounced saute. And I'm like, tell that to every single ballet teacher I've ever had. It is saute. What do you think this means?
I have no idea.
Okay, we're gonna give a little, gif.
Okay. Oh. Okay, this is really video only content.
It is video only.
For anyone that is listening to the podcast, I will tell you what this man is doing. He is, I believe, starting off kind of doing a plie and then like straightening his legs and jumping up. So, are we looking for one word here?
We're looking for a word.
It's not jump.
Yes, it is.
No. Oh my God. I feel like this is basic level French and I'm really failing here.
This is a jump. This is a jump. In ballet, again, if you've listened, you might know that I used to teach like preschool, like age 3, 4, 5, 6 year olds ballet. And for some reason, we would do a lot of sautés because it's, you know, very basic. If you learn how to plié, then you learn how to sauté. And 3, 4, 5 year olds like really don't have the coordination to bend their knees and then straighten them and then bend them again. It was really tough. So it ended up with me like picking up a lot of kids to like try and like get the movement. Cause also they have a hard time jumping in general. Like they can't do it. It's really cute, but oh, miss those days.
This GIF is more than just a standard jump.
No, this is a sauté. This is what a sauté is. This is exactly what a sauté is. Okay. Next one. Adagio. This one, maybe you have a little bit of music knowledge. You might get this one.
I do have music knowledge, but it's more than basic music knowledge. But
Another hint. This is not a specific move. It's like a quality of movement. I'm going to give you the GIF and I'm going to give you some explanation. Okay?
Oh, okay, wait. Okay, again, for our listeners only, it is a woman who is straightening her leg like all the way up to her head, basically, and sort of leaning. Is this... Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to say it's not necessarily the move she's doing, but let's say the speed at which she's doing it.
Oh, I was going to guess that adagio was like extension was the word, but...
No.
So the speed? Mm-hmm. Slow?
Slowly. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
A lot of Swan Lake is actually a lot of it is very quickly, but a lot of it is when they're the prince and Odette are dancing together and her leg is moving slowly. It's a lot of like partner work, very controlled partner work where he's supporting her and her leg is extending slowly or twisting around him very slowly.
She was so flexible. It was ridiculous.
Like gorgeous. Okay. Next word. Bourré. This was a big one in Swan Lake that we saw. This is the swans are doing this the whole show.
The whole show?
Well, there's a specific move that kind of adds to their swan-like quality.
Is it like the arm extensions?
Okay, I'm going to give you the GIF. And I want you to focus on the dancer's feet.
Oh, okay. So the dancer is like on her tiptoes and moving them like very, very... Are she moving them quickly or just like moving her legs?
She's moving them very quickly. Legs. They're okay. She's stepping up and down, but like your feet do not come very far off the floor. They're maybe not even coming off the floor at all. They're just... It's a very quick, tiny steps. And a lot of these words are not... There are a lot of times adjectives maybe describing what... Like, the movement is mimicking.
I mean, is it fast? Like, we just said slowly, and now we're...
No, we're going to give... It's stuffed, packed, crammed, so...
Wow, I would have never, ever got that.
So you got a lot of those little tiny steps in a count of eight. You're not just doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8. You're doing, like, as many as you possibly can. And that's how they kind of get the movement of the swans throughout the whole show. Okay, next word. We can do this. Poisson.
Fish.
Yes, it is this move, this position that the female dancer is in, that he's holding her in. This kind of like leg extended, holding her up.
Oh, wow.
That's what that position is called.
That's so interesting because I feel like, I mean, I'm sure if you're French, all of these words are known to you, but poisson is like... universally known, I feel.
Yeah, it means fish, and this is like a fish position. Okay, here we go. Pas de chat.
Oh, I've heard this one before. I need the GIF.
We need the GIF. Let's focus on what her feet are doing.
Okay, so she is like leaping. But also using her arms.
Don't worry about the arms. It's just the feet. Do we know what pa means?
No.
Do we know what sha means?
Cat.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Something. The cat.
Okay. We're giving step of the cat. Step of the cat.
Oh. Okay. So do they use this in cats as well?
I actually can't remember if they use this in cats. They kind of do, but in ballet, your knees are turned out. But in cats, the knees are turned in or going straight forward. Do you know what I'm saying?
This is so interesting. I never would have thought that these were, like, direct translations. Like, when I have seen this written or heard someone say padishah, I was like, oh, that's a dance move, not step of the cat.
It's,
you know,
it's French words. Like, a lot of ballet originated in France. There's other things we'll talk about, but because all of the movements, I had Russian teachers, and even they would use the French terminology to describe everything. And again, when I'm pronouncing these things, I'm pronouncing it how my ballet teachers told me, not how the French people would correct, like me to pronounce French. Them. Yeah. I don't know if that's right.
Also, we are Canadian, so it's like not French. It's like Canadian French.
Right. So who even knows the correct pronunciation?
It's not France
anymore.
French.
But
yeah.
I know pronunciation based on Russian teachers, okay? Yeah. Whatever they were doing. Okay, this one. Okay. A chaîne. That's how we would say it. A chaîne.
Okay, so she's like spinning around in a circle, but like moving her feet as she goes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it... It's not twirl, is it?
No, I'm going to tell you, and you're going to laugh. It's chain. It's chain because these turns, they are chained together. They are just kind of never ending. There are other types of turns where there's kind of like a break in the turn where you take a step and then you stop. Whereas this, you never stop turning. It's two steps to turn you all the way around.
Right. I should say my other ballet knowledge is from the wildly unsuccessful Tiny Pretty Things.
Right. On Netflix. Oh, what a time. Missed that show.
We loved it, but
I think I watched it twice. It was great. Filmed here in Toronto. Yeah. Okay. And I think this might be the last one. Okay. Fouetté.
Okay. I've also heard this before. I want to say it's some sort of a spin, but I think I'm very wrong.
Oh, you're very right. And now it is a spin, but that's not what the word fouetté means. I'm going to show you. In Swan Lake, actually, the kind of one of the most famous moments is when the black swan, Odile, comes and does 32 fouettés. Was this memorable to you?
Yes, and then he also does...
He did what we would call turns à la seconde. Men do not do fouettés. Only women do fouettés.
But they were, like, kind of competing, right?
Yes, like, she did a bunch, and then he did his turns as well. Fouettés on point are considered maybe one of the most difficult things you can do. So this is what a fouetté looks like. So
she's like leg out, leg in, spinning.
Yes. So if you had to, it's not a turn. The translation isn't turn. But if you had to think a verb, like a French verb, that this kind of embodies, like what would that translation be?
A verb, like not like an animal, like the other
one. No, this is not an animal. This is not like sha. No, it's not pata sha.
It's not a fish.
This is like a verb. This is a verb.
I need another hint.
Okay. Maybe you would use this when you cook sometimes.
I have no idea.
Think this leg movement. She's got her leg going around, and then she turns it really quickly. Whip. It is whipped. Yes, that's what fouetté means. That's what fouetté means. Wow. Okay, that was good. That was good. Am I like...
That was not good. I have to say, the last time I did a PowerPoint presentation quiz, it was for me to guess the Evan Hansens, and I did much better at
This was hard. Some other huge thing about the ballet is that it's so expensive to go see. And I think... And there's a lot of reasons for this, but it does kind of, I think, deter... young people from going to the ballet, and it kind of makes it very much an old person's kind of like art and a white person's art often. And I mean, we can talk about, you know, race in ballet a little bit, because if you look on stage, you're not seeing a lot of people of color. I noticed in the corps de ballet, I noticed this because there was, I believe, one black dancer in the corps de ballet who were portrayed like the ensemble of swans. I noticed this because she had tights to match her own skin color versus the pink tights that all the other women were wearing. And so something interesting about the pink tights is that when ballet was kind of first starting, they wore pink tights because it was the closest to skin color that they could get without being like scandalous, basically. Oh. That's why dancers wear pink tights. So it is meant to kind of mimic skin color in a way. And I think that does kind of show you like how ingrained racism is to ballet, and that there was never a thought that anyone would have any other skin color as a dancer. And so I do think like it is progress to see a dancer, a black dancer, not have to wear the pink tights and get to wear the tights that like match her skin tone better. And even, you know, the illusion netting often is used in ballet costumes, especially in these swan costumes, to have stuff that matches her skin tone. But still, it was one dancer in the corps de ballet. And we also talked about who played Prince Siegfried's friend, like Sife November, who I think I've seen him before. I think is just a stunning dancer.
Yeah.
He stands out because he's gorgeous, but he also stands out because he's very often the only black dancer on stage.
He is such a high jumper. I was shocked at how high he can jump.
It's crazy because he's a very small man.
Yeah.
But he dances so big and so sharp. He's a gorgeous dancer. Mm-hmm. Going to the ballet is very expensive, and there are a lot of reasons for this. One, it doesn't make a lot of money, number one. A lot of ballet productions and companies operate at a loss and rely on donors and donations to make it through the season. A lot of theater companies do this, but the ballet specifically, because let's think about what we saw on stage. The corps de ballet, the swans, I was counting, there were 24 of them on stage.
Right.
So we're paying 24 dancers plus all of your leads, your kind of ensemble members, not necessarily dancing. Then you've got a full orchestra, a full orchestra underneath. So also very expensive. Then all of the kind of behind the scenes people, stage managers, I don't know, anyone in the crew, anyone working on set, costume design, the huge costume house. They made all new costumes for this production, which they don't always do. Like next year or the year after, they'll use these same costumes and kind of play around and put the dancers in and kind of put them into different costumes and see what fits who and kind of alter them a little bit, but they'll save these costumes and reuse them. Huge brand new set. What else is expensive? Literally everything is expensive. Maintaining the theater.
Well, renting the space,
Yeah.
The theater itself. You have to pay for the ushers that are there, like everything. To even just like run a house is just expensive.
Absolutely, like front of house stuff. So it's so, so expensive. And Swan Lake was something, because it has great name recognition, sold really well. So I don't know if they were concerned about this, but you know, not everything sells as well. A lot of times they'll put on what's called a mixed bill or a mixed program, where it's, let's say, three or four shorter ballets, which oftentimes have more like modern choreography, more modern music. And because they don't have the name recognition, they're often much less sold and they're operating at a loss. So again, rely hugely on donations and also hugely on the production of the Nutcracker that almost every single ballet company puts on in the months of November, December, January, kind of, because that's their big moneymaker to bring audiences in, having them pay these premium prices to kind of sustain them for the rest of the year. If you look in the program under each person's name, sometimes it'll say, you know, sponsored by the specific person, like their salary, their pointe shoes, their rehearsal wear, whatever is paid for by like one specific sponsor or donor. It's, I think, you know, theater as well is run a lot on donations, but ballet very specifically relies heavily, heavily on donations.
I mean, not to, again, bring in Tiny Pretty Things, but to bring in Tiny Pretty Things,
sure.
Like, they spend multiple episodes talking about getting a sponsorship for these dancers and how
to go,
like,
to school. To go to school, yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, so there, I think there is, like, a lot of politics in ballet, and I mean, we will not even get into, like, the bad side. Go listen to, like, our West Side Story episode if you want to hear, like, the kind of bad side about ballet.
Absolutely.
But, like, there's a lot of bad things about the politics of ballet as well. So it is interesting. And then, like, sort of what I was saying at the top of this episode about it, like, being like a chic event, like, you're charging $18 for a glass of champagne, and almost every single person in there was drinking a glass of champagne. Then you're also paying, your, the ticket prices are upwards of $150 for seats in the More. Orchestra. You can yeah. get like $45 seats if you're sitting like at the back. We were lucky to get the $12 standing room. I don't know if you, did you touch on the dance break that's not available?
I haven't. So there's a few ways if you're in Toronto. I'm sure other theater, like ballet companies have similar programs, but if you're in Toronto, National Ballet, they have a few ways to get cheaper tickets. So the one I've always done is for patrons 29 and under. It's called Dance Break, and you sign up, you register your age when you make your account. And I believe right now the tickets would be $45. They're kind of a rush. They become available at midnight the day of the performance, and it's kind of just whatever's available. It's how I've been able to see a lot of ballets sitting really good seats in orchestra, but they didn't offer them for Swan Lake because it sold really, really well. Also, sometimes they'll have Day of Rush, which will be sometimes online, sometimes in person, kind of around that same price point.
I think it said it was $30 on the website this year, but again, not available for Swan Lake.
No. This is stuff that's usually more available for kind of like the lesser name recognition productions.
Yeah.
And then what we did, which was standing room. So you had to go in person the morning of the performance before the box office opened. The box office opens at 11 usually. And so I was there around 10 o'clock. And they were $12 tickets each to stand. We were at the back of ring 3, but I think they're in ring 4 and 5 as well. I believe there were 60 tickets available. I was 5th in line. 4 people were ahead of me. And I thought they were great, great seats. And for $12, you cannot go wrong. You cannot go wrong.
And before we went in, we did go to the box office to see like 1 hour to showtime, or maybe 45 minutes to showtime if there were any standing room tickets available. And there were. Not saying that that is the way that you should do that, but like, let's say you're out and about, happen to stumble across the ballet, want to check if there's a ticket, always check they before performance because they might be there. So, and I've been lucky that way at like theater performances too. So these things like do exist because I don't think that many people know about them. The hardcores know about them, but I don't know how many other people know about it.
Yes, I was working hard to find, you know, a way for us to see this cheaply, because when you see, you know, as much theater, as much performance as we do, or we hope to anyway, it really does add up.
It adds up.
And arts absolutely like are worth spending money on, but 100%. Everyone has a budget that they need to abide by, and you know, $200 was not in my budget, but $12 was in my budget.
It's so true. I thought it was interesting, and I said to you before we started recording, but I think it is like worth saying here too. Obviously, like, we post every time that we go to a show on our Instagram, and I do as well on my personal, and never have I had so many people reach out to me to ask me how the ballet was. And I'm like, this is so interesting because not a lot of people care for either plays or shows that we're seeing, but there's something about the ballet that everyone is universally interested in.
It has like a mystique about it. It's like kind of mysterious.
Yeah. So, but to speak on that, like, one of my colleagues and friends from work, like, her family is visiting in from India, and this was something that they would have loved to do, but she said it would have cost $800 for 5 of them to go to the ballet, and that's just not something they can afford to do right now. And I mean, I don't know that they're willing to have 5 people stand for 2.5 hours, but I did tell her that that was an option. But it is interesting to know that, like, everyone is super interested in the ballet and what it's like.
Yeah, so. I think there's something to it that because it's an art form that has been around for hundreds plus years, and kind of somewhat unchanged. Like, the dance moves they're doing in Swan Lake that we saw, you know, in 2022 are almost exactly the same as the dance moves they were doing, you know, 101.
Yeah.
I believe it was 1877 it first premiered. So similar to then, you know, technique has changed and evolved. And I don't think in 1877 they were, let's say, as flexible as dancers are now. Like, everything kind of gets pushed and pushed to its limits. But for the most part, the moves, like, they were plieing, they were sautéing, they were fouetteing in 1877, and they're doing it now. So it's kind of an art form that has evolved, but has also stayed the same. And I think there's something like really intriguing about that.
Yeah,
and see like the athleticism,
and also like not only these are the same moves, but these are the same moves, like, go to New York, they're doing Swan Lake, it's the same. Go to London at the, in England at the ballet, it would be the same. So it's like a universal, I don't know, I think it's like more universal than most art forms.
Yeah, which, back to what I was saying at the beginning, because there's no language associated with it, the language is movement, it feels like almost accessible and also kind of like above, if that makes sense. Like, it's both accessible and like higher, like a higher art form than everything else. It's a very interesting juxtaposition. I like, you know, me dancing as a child and as a teenager was nowhere near the level of what is happening on the stage, but even having like a little taste of what they're doing, like, it almost makes me like 10 times more interested in knowing and wanting to see it. And I don't know, I love seeing anyone perform and dance on stage, but the ballet, there's like something very special about seeing it, I think.
No, I agree.
So because I go to the ballet every year, usually, I get the kind of like season preview for the next season in the mail. And I just want to show, like, you know, National Ballet, they're always doing, I think, fun things. So I just want to like go through it and like talk about their next season a little bit, because I think it has some interesting things. So this next season is the first one that Hope Muir, M-U-I-R. Let's go with that. She's the new artistic director after Karen Kane stepped out at the end of kind of last season. It's ended up being like a long transition because of the pandemic. It's like a new era for the National Ballet of Canada. So I'm excited to see like what her programming choices, like what she keeps the same, what she's going to make different, because Karen has been there for so, so long. And she almost, to me, is associated so heavily with the National Ballet of Canada. Like it right. is her, like the public perception of it is her. So next season they've got, I believe, a new work by Wayne McGregor, inspired by Margaret Atwood's Mad Adam, whatever, trilogy.
Oh my god, that giant picture of Margaret Atwood.
I know, right there, Margaret Atwood. And I don't know, I'm interested. I don't know if I'll see it, but like, it's quite, she does kind of like these dystopic
novels. Yeah, that's Handmaid's Tale Ballet.
Imagine, you know, the costumes would be really...
that'd be hard to dance in.
It would be hard to dance in. It would, though, would be like the... The, like,
they could just wear the hats, but like that's it. The they full, wouldn't have like, to wear like cape. Cloaks.
There's this ballet. I actually haven't been able to see it, but there's this ballet called Giselle, and she, I believe, is like scorned. Something happens with her husband. She's like scorned by her lover and dies. I'm like really butchering the plot of Giselle.
Oh.
And the like ensemble, they're called the Wheelies, I believe it's like with a W, and they kind of dance but with like chiffon over them, because they're kind of like spirits of these other women who've been scorned by their lovers. And so I always wonder how difficult it is to like dance covered in tulle or chiffon. The Nutcracker, as always, classic. I will be honest, I don't love the National Ballet's Nutcracker that they put on. I don't like the Roller Skating Bear. You can see it anywhere else. See it anywhere else. Like, literally anywhere else. Anywhere else. A mixed bill of new work by Rena Butler, Animus, and Symphony in C. These are really fun ones to see, because usually Dance Break and Rush are, like, really available because a lot of people don't want to go. And you get kind of, like, a taste of three different types of ballet that are usually very different from each other, so very fun to go to. And yeah, like Symphony in C is probably gonna be extremely classic, whereas these other ones will be much more modern. Cinderella, really, really fun. It's like very 1920s inspired, and the costuming is gorgeous. Frame by Frame by Guillaume Cote. I haven't seen this yet, but he's a principal dancer for the National Ballet of Canada, so I'd be really interested to see like kind of what he does. And then finally, like Romeo and Juliet. This, okay, besides Swan Lake, I would say Romeo and Juliet is the number one I would recommend for a newbie, because everybody knows this story.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the story of Romeo and
Juliet.
And if
you don't, where have you been?
Yes, and you've probably seen so many different versions of it. And when I saw it, it's almost like, because I'd seen it so many different versions of it and read it and heard those words before, it's like I could hear Shakespeare's words.
Yeah,
being performed on stage. Like, so much of Shakespeare is the language. And then mm-hmm. when you're seeing it in a ballet, you're removing the language from it. So it's so interesting to see how they translate those words into movement only. And then
right.
I've always said this about Romeo and Juliet. I could see a million different versions of it. And it's like magical every time when they're at the balcony and, you know, he's like calling to her from the bottom. Magical every time. When they see each other for the first time, magical every time. Doesn't matter how many, the ballet, West Side Story, Leo and Claire Danes, it doesn't matter. It's
even
always magical.
The Hyde Park one we saw, Shakespeare in the Park.
It was
so
like
good.
It was like rivaling like soccer teams or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is dumb. And then when he was like climbing up to her on the balcony, I'm like, magical every time.
Yeah.
It just works. Shakespeare did that. So anyway, I think it's a really fun place to go. I do think there are budget ways to do it. You just need to do your research. And sometimes maybe it's just a special treat that you splurge on. I think the National Ballet of Canada does really great quality stuff. And I think if you're uncertain, definitely go to one that, and you're going to splurge on it, go to one that has a name that you'll recognize, like a Cinderella, like a Romeo and Juliet. I saw an Alice in Wonderland, which is really, really fun, choreographed by Christopher Wheeldon. So you can't go wrong with that.
Tony Winner,
Christopher Wheeldon. A few years ago, they did Anna Karenina, which was really, really cool. I really, really liked that. Sleeping Beauty is also really fun. That one's a really beautiful one. So yeah, you really can't go wrong with kind of one with name recognition. And even if you hate what's going on stage, close your eyes and there's a world-class orchestra performing for you. So
it's true.
You are getting your bang for your buck, but there also are budget ways to attend the ballet.
Yeah, I would recommend it. I would go back if that gives you any...
Wow. You would go, Tara would go back. Wow, okay, now I'm going to be like, Tara, I'm going to make you come with me.
Maybe we could sit next time, though.
Maybe we could sit next time. I'll try and get dance break tickets next time. Will we pay the $45 for this? I think I would. In the orchestra only,
though. Well, we were planning to. We were planning to.
In the orchestra.
So that was our time at the ballet. I'm happy that we got to finally experience it 2 years later. And, yeah, for all of the reasons stated above. Sadly, when this episode comes out, Swan Lake just ended yesterday. So you cannot go see Swan Lake. But, I mean, I know you said the Nutcracker is not the best here, but
it's not my favorite.
It is a Christmas time staple in Toronto. So
it's expensive. There's rarely a budget option for it. You might be able to get standing room.
We are trying to sell the Nutcracker here. We are not trying to shut it down.
I'm not trying to sell the Nutcracker. They get enough ticket seats. See something else. Okay? Support their other stuff so they're not extending the Nutcracker.
What's happening for the rest of this year? Do you know?
I think... So summer is usually off, like a normal theater season. I do think there's something maybe at Harborfront in August.
Oh.
Which they did last summer as well. I'm going to see if we can get tickets to that. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it might be free. But you might need to like sign up. We love when things are free. So I think there's actually going to be something in Harborfront at the end of the summer. Don't quote me on that, but I do think so.
Okay.
But normally, yes, ballet takes the summer off, like a normal kind of theater season, and comes back in the fall.
Okay. So keep your eyes out. We'll maybe see something again in the summer. But yeah, I would return to the ballet. So I feel like that's the main takeaway from this.
That is a big endorsement. No, it is. It really is.
Yeah. And with that being said, it is now time for our obsession of the week.
My obsession of the week, at time of record, last night we got to see an original Canadian musical playing here in Hyde Park. It's a collaboration between Musical Stage Co. and Obsidian Theatre, and is a musical called Dixon Road about a family of Somalian immigrants who come to Canada in 1991 during their Civil War, and kind of their immigrant experience and what they went through at the time kind of told through the eyes of a teenage girl. And I was like semi-nervous for if it was going to be good or not. Were you nervous about this?
We had read like a couple things. We had read a few tweets like before we went. We were trying to see this. I think we had said it on our Tony's episode. First of all, the amount of things that are in Toronto right now, specifically.
We have a spreadsheet.
Yeah, there's so much going on, and it's so exciting because it has not been like this in two years. And it's... like hard trying to get to everything this is a good problem to have. Like, it's a problem, but it's a great problem to have. But we had said that this was playing, unfortunately, again, on episode release. It is closed.
It was just a week and a half run, really. I hope there's a life after this. Did I say it was called Dixon Road? It's a musical called Dixon Road. Okay.
But I think the last new Canadian musical we saw was Blackout. And
In the same venue.
It was good, but I think because we had seen a version at, oh my God, what was that called?
Reprint. We wanted to love Blackout. And
we loved it there, right?
So yeah, we didn't love the full version that we saw last time.
So I think because of that, immediately we're like a little bit nervous.
Hackles
and then
up.
We had seen some tweets being like, this is actually really, really great.
The reviews were really great. And so
it was really great.
It was so great. I loved it. I thought it was so good. I want it to have a further life. So when Chippy the Chipmunk, like,
oh my God,
fell into the splits, I lost, like, truly lost
star
it.
Star of the show.
Star of the show, Chippy. No, it was, like, smart. It was funny. The music was really great. My obsession is there's a video that was released. There's a few videos. I'm crying thinking about it. But there's a few videos released of music from it. But the song Find Me, it's, like, pretty early. And it's kind of a theme throughout the whole show. And I thought it was really wonderful.
How many girls has the world told no? Then they grow up and they don't know where to go. Because you spit on their sparks, slip their hopes out clean. Now we're left with young women who've forgotten how to dream. And I don't know what I want, but I know what I don't is to be the one who freezes, the person who chokes. Because she can't decide, she can't see inside. Can't see anything, I'll try anything. I'll do anything to find me.
I was talking like a bit to my mom earlier because it's about a family who comes to Canada because it's not safe for them anymore in Somalia. And that wasn't exactly like my mom's family's experience, but they moved from Italy to Canada. And so much of their story of, you know, looking for work, living with other, you know, family members or members of their community that they had already come here before, like, was so similar to my family's story. And, you know, my mom's family came from Italy and they came from Somalia, which is, you know, completely different places. And yet, like, there's so much in common. And so even though it was this very specific story, it was like a very universal story. And I thought it was told like really, really well.
Yeah. Music, really good. Hamilton-esque rap at moments. We were saying, like, kind of a similar vibe to Grow, and if you listen to our Grow episode, you know how much we enjoyed Grow as well. Coming to Toronto.
Yeah, the thing that really reminded me, it's like, you know, thrust into the world of Toronto and not being exactly like you expected, you know?
Yeah.
That was like, oh, that's so funny. That's something in common with them.
But I would be interested, like, I think we had said this on our Blackout episode last year, too, like, I'd be interested to see this inside and what they could do with a stage, because obviously you can only do so much at High Park. It's very difficult. The stage, the main threat, like, stage whatever is there, and you just have to work with it because it's set for Shakespeare in the Park, really. But I think what's so fun is that the last couple years, and maybe this was forced because of the pandemic, but it's not just for Shakespeare in the Park anymore. Like, there's so much going on in High Park. If you go to Canadian Stage's website, like, Dream in High Park is happening all summer long. There are, like, concerts happening throughout the summer. Shakespeare in the Park is back this year, which is so exciting. August, we believe. But it normally runs till, like, October-ish, I want to say.
I think, like, September.
When
the weather's still warm.
Don't make the same mistake we did and go, like, the very last weekend when it was freezing.
It was like September 3rd, I feel.
No, it was.
I swear it was like the Friday before Labor Day. I swear.
This was like a few years ago. Maybe 5 years ago now. Yeah.
We froze our butts off.
Oh my God.
It was so cold. We're huddled together. Because it gets really packed for Shakespeare too. So we're like not even on a seat properly. We're just kind of like on the grass.
And then
bring a cushion.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm pretty sure we said this in our Stratford episode. This is where it began, because that's where people brought cushions to that outdoor concert that we saw. So to say it publicly on this podcast again, just for ourselves to listen to this, or maybe
we never learn. We never learn.
Bring a seat cushion because it's important. Mosquitoes are out, everybody. Bug season. So bring some bug spray. But spray it before you get into the High Park Amphitheater. Like, don't disrespect
the people
sitting around you.
Yeah.
And food is back. So you can have picnics again. Yes, which is really exciting.
It's a kind of magical venue to be outside.
Oh my God, I love it there so much. Even when the bats are flying above your head, it is magical.
Yes, there's a lot of like animals going around.
The crickets were out last night.
But there,
adds to it.
It's magical that you're surrounded by Toronto and the park, and it's really fun. So Dixon Road, amazing. It's written by Fatuma Adir, and she was in the audience the night we saw it. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of exciting. And I want to see what she does next, because I thought this was really, really good.
Yeah, really well done. My obsession this week is musical theater adjacent, but it's been a few months since we have last talked about this person, and we used to talk about her all the time because she was in a relationship with our other favorite person.
Wow.
And I don't think we have talked about on the podcast that they broke up.
This
I'm talking about like Renee Rapp.
Devastating Antonio specifically Cipriano. To us. Dumois reported on it, and that's how you know.
There was also another devastating breakup during the pandemic that I don't think we reported about during the podcast, and it was Wesley Taylor and Isaac Powell.
Yes. What about also, if we're doing breakups, Shalina Kennedy and Jen Colella?
And Jen Colella is engaged.
To someone
I know. There were a lot of pandemic breakups, but really the one that was devastating to us was Renee and Antonio.
Yeah.
And
they
never publicly said that they broke up, but like it happened because Renee is releasing music. And I feel like we have talked about this on a few episodes that there are some people's music, aka Jeremy Jordan, that we weren't excited about their like solo career, but Renee was someone that we were super excited about, and she has released a song, and this is my obsession this week. It's called Tattoos. If you follow her on TikTok, if you follow her on Instagram, you've heard this song.
I knew every word when it came out because it was on TikTok.
And if this is the style of the rest of the music she's making, I want to be front row at that concert because it is so good. It's very angsty, but like young.
15 and 16, I had to be strong. 22,
I'm still scared of it all.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? On Taylor Swift's Red, Taylor's version, Nothing New, you know? How can everything at 18 but nothing at 22? It's kind of like the same thing. Like the older you get, the more you realize I actually know nothing, you know?
Yes. I think she sounds so good on this. I mean, Renee always sounds amazing.
Vocals.
So, like, it was always going to be an album that was serving vocals. But I'm so excited for this, like, next stage in her life. She's, like, obviously killing it in the HBO universe. But I do eventually want to see her back on stage because I feel like we never really got her on stage. But I will take this music career because I feel like this is where she really wants to be.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I love it. I love the song. I downloaded it. I pre-saved. That's how much I pre-saved because Renee said to pre-save it,
I don't know if you can pre-save on Spotify.
I don't know either, but it was a pre-save Apple Music link, and I pre-saved
We're a two streaming service podcast. Terry's on Apple and I'm on Spotify, so.
Exactly. So if Renee ever listens to this episode, we love you, Renee.
And you know what? Antonio's doing fine, too. He's in the National Treasure TV show, so happy for
him. And Ingrid Michaelson, we're still waiting for the casting of the Notebook musical.
So that we can decide if we're coming.
If Antonio was in it, we're coming. And if he's not, I'm not sure we are, so. It all really depends on that casting.
That's a good reason to go to Chicago and also extend Devil Wears Prada by like 3 weeks so it overlaps.
Yeah, I feel like every time we do an episode now, there's like an update that comes out the next day. And the today update was that the casting is out for the Devil Wears Prada musical.
Christian Thompson playing Christian Thompson.
Iconic. I feel like there were like many updates. Oh, the latest update is Beanie and Jane Lynch are leaving Funny Girl in September. That's a new update. And also today, this is, it's June 15th, the day of episode recording. So this is the news for today. The new Matilda trailer is out for the new musical movie for Netflix. I'm really excited about it. I think it looks great.
It looks like a really good adaptation of that musical.
Yeah. So there's like so much happening. And if you would like us to release our spreadsheet of theater for June and July... Let us know, because there's a lot happening.
I should add the notebook to it, basically, because I forgot.
You should add the notebook to it, yeah. Yeah, there's, like, so much going on. It's just, like, super exciting to be back in, like, full force. I can't believe we saw a show last night. I can't believe we saw the ballet on Sunday and then watched the Tonys on Sunday night. Like, how crazy is that?
We're kind of back to our regular schedule, almost. Almost, not quite. Because... We used to kind of go to the theater sometimes twice a week before, or like a weekend and a weekday. It used to happen all the time. And this, I feel, is like the first time it's happened since the before time. So I'm happy. I'm really happy.
Yeah. Wild. And there's some really good stuff, which is the most exciting part of it all. Yeah. Like everything has been really quality. Which
that's why we need a
amazing
spreadsheet to try and like plan it all out.
So that's our thoughts on the ballet and also our obsessions of the week. If you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can also subscribe to us on YouTube, and we would really appreciate it if you left us a comment.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off2BWayPodcast with the number 2, and leave us a comment if there's any other type of theater that we should go to. Should we go to the opera?
Should we go to the opera? I don't know if I'm ready for the opera.
I don't know either. I feel like the opera is almost like too different.
Like the Phantom is the most opera I've been to. And maybe, it's not even opera.
Maybe we need a guide to go to the opera or something. Someone we know or someone to like take us to the opera.
We know someone. I don't know that there's anything like currently playing in Toronto that like I'm dying to. The opera is like 5 hours long.
I know. Can I tell like a funny story? Now that we're like an hour plus into the episode, who was listening anymore? For my grandparents, I believe their 50th wedding anniversary, my mom's cousin got them tickets to the opera in Toronto, to the opera The Marriage of Figaro. So my nonno, my grandfather, he's like, I'm not going to that. And so my mom was like, oh, I'll take my nonna, my grandmother. I was in high school and I was at a dance competition that weekend, and my mom always took me, so she couldn't take me. So my dad took my nonna to the opera. Okay, so they go, act one. This is in Italian, I presume.
Honestly, props to your dad.
Props to my dad. So at intermission, they're like waiting, they're walking around. My nonna, who is in her 70s, looks around and says to my dad, a lot of old people here.
Amazing.
And then there was another moment, I believe it was like, At intermission, the second intermission, because it was three acts, the second intermission. Sometimes the ballet is three acts, which is kind of annoying, but like multiple intermissions. After the second act, my nonna was like, let's leave. And my dad was like, no, we're here. We're staying for the
end. Oh my God. Wow.
I believe it was at the Winter Garden.
Okay, now that we're like super, super off topic, I would be remiss if I did not mention that my dad was in the opera. He was in The Barber of Seville.
Oh, I knew this.
But he was... I know, we've tried to find the program, but, like, we cannot find it.
This is a favorite story of your dad's.
Yeah, literally, like, yes, he shot The Barber of Seville. He was that kid. That is a big title to give a kid, and he was paid for that performance. So anytime the opera gets mentioned around him...
He's got to tell the story.
So I feel like our introduction to the opera should be seeing The Barber of Seville.
Okay, we need to wait for The Barber of Seville to come. I would see like La Boheme. I think that would be interesting. Yeah. Okay, yeah. We'll watch what Toronto's playing.
Like not full blown opera, but like something in between to get us there.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if that exists, but if it
for
exists,
some reason
like,
it feels like there's a bigger barrier between before going to the opera versus going to the ballet. And I don't quite know why that is.
Yeah, like I was down for the ballet first before I was set.
Yeah, and I've never been to the opera either, so I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's it. That's all we have for you today. So we will see you guys next time.
Bye.